Hey guys, it's your lady gang, Jack Vanek, Kelty Knight, and Becca Tobin. Thank you so much for subscribing on iTunes, and thanks for supporting the great sponsors who make it possible for us to have this much fun with you every single week for free.
Well, what is this?
Welcome to the lady gang.
That's amazing. Say that again.
The lady gang.
Things are about to change around here.
Each week we catch up with Hollywood's hottest girl posse, Kelty Knight, Becca Tobin, and Jack Vanek.
Hello, 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 and welcome to the lady gang. I am Becca Tobin, actress, blogger, and podcaster.
Yeah.
Across from me is Kelty Knight of Entertainment Tonight.
That sounds
Kelty
so good.
Tonight.
I can't get over
Kelty
it.
Kelty Tonight.
Kelty Tonight.
Exciting.
To my right, Jack Vanek, owner, CEO, clothing designer, female entrepreneur, and lady boss.
And also, your boobs look incredible right now.
Thank
what happened?
You.
Padded bra, third love.
Really?
Bitch.
Oh, you tried the padded?
Mm-hmm. I haven't tried the padded yet. I'm going to try it.
They look great.
Can't wait. Okay, so today, yes, I did have a great question for today.
Oh, okay.
Can't wait.
Wait, I wrote it down. I have a terrible memory. That's my bad week right there. question of the week.
Okay.
Do you wear shoes inside of your home?
Absolutely not. Are you surprised?
Is that?
I have a sign on my wall that says, please remove your shoes. We're one half Canadian. In Canada, you don't wear your shoes in
you
people's
really
houses
don't.
Because it is so rude. Mostly because it's very mucky in Canada because it's winter and then it's like muddy spring and then it's like a little bit muddy summer and then it's like winter again. So you couldn't anyway. But I find it revoltingly disgusting. Like there's dog crap and whatever.
Disgusting.
And then it just goes on your floors and then you're just barefoot and then it's in your bed with you. It's disgusting.
Yeah. I don't, but I have a pair of house slippers that I wear.
Ooh,
oh,
yeah.
My God. Well, because my freaking apartment's really old, so it gets dusty. So it's a way for me to not get my feet all dusty.
Yeah. See, I was a no-shoe person in New York because New York is like you're walking through filth.
Yeah, it's disgusting.
In L.A., I'm a little bit – I break the rules a little bit because if I've been hiking, yes, they stay downstairs. They don't come up. But in L.A., I realize that I really don't walk – like outside in filth, like I'm in a building or I'm in my car or like maybe a parking lot. To me, I'm just not as grossed out. So,
well, you should be.
But then I also feel like my dog doesn't take her quote shoes off when she comes in, and so
oh, she doesn't.
She's
you don't
gonna,
wipe her paws.
I mean, we'll wipe them, but like I can't
but
imagine that does
out,
anything.
Yeah, no.
So I'm just sort of like I'm gonna pick my battles,
whatever,
you know. And that there's... is like having the dishes done.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right, and now it's time for...
Good week.
Yes, it is.
Bad week.
Oh, no.
Who wants to go first?
I'll go.
Jack will go.
It's been a while, guys, but I have a new term.
Yes.
And this is a good one.
Can't wait.
So, I mean, everybody knows what ghosting is.
Yeah.
Obviously,
yeah.
It's like a pop culture reference.
Uh-huh.
So there's a new thing that people do that's shittier than ghosting, and it's called breadcrumbing. And from Urban
breadcrumbing,
yes, and from also known as Hansel and Gretling from Urban Dictionary, it's when a guy or girl gives someone just enough attention to keep their hope of a relationship
Ooh.
Alive. And this is like, for example, I went out on a great date with a guy, right? And it's like, there's definitely going to be a second date, whatever. Don't hear from him again, but then he comments heart eye emojis on like all my Instagrams.
Ew.
Like you're just
take
leaving
your filthy
breadcrumbs around for somebody to just be like, ooh, are they gonna ask me out again?
Oh
yeah.
Ew. I love it.
That's
it,
really good.
It's a good
really
one.
Good.
Yeah, because guys do it all the time.
They do.
I hate them.
Gross.
My bad week. So okay, you know how like our phones basically like listen to everything that we say.
So weird.
And then you'll, you know, talk about a movie and then you'll
terrifying.
See an ad for that movie on
yes.
Facebook. So it's gotten to like a really weird point for me.
Weirder than like the raves. Remember when like all that was showing up was raves?
Oh, yeah. That's because I kept looking at raver videos.
Oh, okay.
That was just a snowball.
Well, then never mind. I thought that was just random. Okay.
That was just a snowball because it came up and then I'd watch one and then another one would come up because I watched it and then I just made it come up. So my friend told me about an article that another friend of ours had posted about how it's a conspiracy theory that Chris Cornell and Chester Bennington, both who had committed suicide earlier this year, we're going to expose a child pedophile ring in Hollywood, right? It's like the craziest.
That they were going to expose it or they would be exposed by being in it?
No, they're going to expose it. And then they're like, and then they both committed suicide. And it's like, maybe it was something bigger.
Whoa.
So anyways, he was telling me about this story, this article, like fake news website. And then I swear to God, the next 24 hours, like video after video after video after article of different people trying to expose this like fake pedophile ring were coming up on my Facebook. And I'm like, you're not selling me a purse. You're not trying to do anything. It's just somehow something's listening in my phone and giving me more articles about the child sex ring that's happening.
Hashtag pedophile.
Yeah.
Pretty popular.
But your phone's listening to you.
It's yeah, so I know that. Okay, I'll go. So my good week is that I recently picked up a tip. Not recently. Probably like, when was the last time we were on Skinny Confidential? A while ago.
A while ago.
I picked up a tip from Lauren, and I forgot about it until one day I was holding Zach's phone. And I was like, I want to mess with him, but like, what should I do? I can't change his wallpaper. That's boring. He'll see it right away. No, I've already done the predictive text on him. He was so confused. It's so good. I went on his Instagram and followed about 17 baby animal Instagram accounts.
Amazing.
There are so many, by the way.
So many.
I know. I follow like 100.
So many baby animals. And hours later, he's sitting next to me and he's looking through and he's like, oh my God, this is so funny. And he like, it's a baby animal. And he shows it to me. I'm like, oh, that's cute. What's that on? And he's like, I don't know. I think it's like a sponsored thing. Cause you know how now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, that's weird. And then he's like, there's so many of them. Sponsored. What? Everything is a baby animal. I'm like, is it the same account? And he's like, no, it's like so many different ones. It was so enjoyable. And then I like started laughing and I was like, ha ha ha. He's like, oh my God, did you follow a baby animal account? And he like unfollowed the one that I thought that he thought that I had followed or the one that he thought I followed. And it just kept coming. And he's like, I just don't understand. Cause they also have the same names where it's like the baby animals, baby animals. And he's like, I keep following them. It won't let me unfollow. I'm like, no, it's cause you're following 17. So
amazing.
It's so good. Thank you, Lauren, from
amazing.
Skinny Confidential. Here's my bad week. Well, I was sitting at a restaurant. I won't say which one of my favorites. And I got up to use the restroom and I go in the restroom and it's a male and a female stall like separate. So mm-hmm. Men are not using this. I went in the female stall and it looked like a homeless person had been living there for months.
Oh.
Women are disgusting.
Oh, yeah.
What the hell is wrong with these people? And you know what it came down to as I was squatting over the toilet, looking around at like the sanitary napkins. This wasn't even a bar. So they weren't even like drunk people. It was just disgusting, lazy humans. And it's a nice restaurant. So I know that there's no like, you know, homeless people creeping in. Like it's the patrons of this restaurant. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, you know what this reminds me of? It's what my mom always told me. Character is what you do when no one is looking. And you know what? We got a lot of characterless freaking women out there because I looked at the men's pristine.
But like, was nobody cleaning it? That's also a problem.
Well, but like, don't leave your tampon on the floor.
Should anyone have to clean your dirty tampon or your sanitary napkin that's like haphazardly wrapped in toilet paper and almost in the trash bin? Like,
oh, I agree. It's disgusting.
And there's pee everywhere. There's pee everywhere. Like, what?
There's a rhyme about that.
If I pee on the floor, I always wipe it up.
On the floor?
On the floor?
Don't ask. It's your story. It's your story.
Women, I'm sorry. Character is what you do when no one is looking.
Preach.
Thank you.
Okay, here's my character when no one's looking.
Oh, God.
Thank you. I have a bad week. So yesterday I was doing a shoot at Chateau Marmont, which is a big famous hotel in LA. It's like a celebrity hotspot. And I was pretty early for my carpet. And so I decided to take a walk in like my TV outfit, which was like a jumpsuit with like heels, and I didn't have any other clothes, up to like the CVS on the corner to get a water, and then I was going to walk back. So I like walked a good couple blocks there and back, which people don't walk in LA. So anyway, so I was at the crosswalk and it was a red light and I was waiting to cross, and not one, not two, but three Star Tours vans rolled up right beside me. And I was like, had no sunglasses because I forgot them. I was like, this is my moment when all the Star Tours.
You did a Jeremy Piven. Did you pull a Jeremy Piven?
No, I was just standing there, and like, I definitely turned to the left and like kind of made eye contact with a couple of people and like looked over my shoulder like, oh, what's coming behind me? Just so they'd like see the front of my face and really recognize me. And no one did.
Okay.
You
didn't
did.
See that coming that anywhere.
Is, if you had had a horn to honk from your convertible like Jeremy Piven.
Is that what he did?
Wait, he pulled up next to the Star Tour and honked his horn in his convertible, and all of the people looked over and he started waving. Like he needed
I would do
them.
That.
But I think that's what a lot of celebrities do.
There's no way.
No, but
there's no way yeah, that a celebrity's
like,
going to
hey
be
guys,
like,
hey, this is Michael Jordan or whoever.
Hey. No way.
I think Richard Simmons did that, and that's why he went into hiding. He
yeah,
got so
no,
tired.
He used to do that. Like,
no,
all the
he
time.
Also used to let people come to his house.
Yeah.
I'm like,
okay.
Anyway,
let people
whatever.
In.
This isn't about you, Becca, or Richard Simmons. It's about
so
me.
So you did Jeremy Piven it.
I didn't honk.
She like
if you
I
had a honk.
She politely.
Yeah.
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 Okay.
Anyways,
good week. So I was writing a new bio for my website with all my accolades because I'm so famous, and I sent my bio to my husband. I was like, hey, can you like just check this for me? What do you think? And he wrote back. He's like, I have a few notes, and then like dot, 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 dot. And like down the page were the notes, and here they were. Most beautiful, super cute and sexy, my one and only for all time. You forgot this part. In my bio. Isn't that so nice?
That's so nice.
Why is do you get
so
it, Jack?
Great? No, I'm trying to... Is he trying to say you should mention him in your bio?
No, he was like, you forgot these
those,
like things about you. Mm. Most beautiful.
That's
cute.
Love him so much. Anyway, on the podcast today, we have Pam from The Office. Jenna
so
Fisher
excited.
Is here. She's freaking hilarious. Get ready.
Okay, what's going on? Now, here's the lady gang.
Our guest today is a two-time SAG Award-winning and Emmy-nominated actress and cultural every girl for playing her iconic role of Pam on the U.S. version of The Office. Fun fact, she was actually a receptionist and administrative assistant in Los Angeles offices before her acting career took off, so she's actually Pam, guys. Also, fun fact, right before she became one of the biggest stars on television, she had an uncredited role as woman number one in The 40-Year-Old Virgin and has since starred in hit movies Blades of Glory, Walk Hard, The Dewey Cox Story, The Brother Solomon, and more. She's got a brand new movie coming out this September with Ben Stiller called Brad's Status. She's the mama to two beautiful babies, Weston and Harper, and she also has a super hot husband named Lee. She's written a new book called The Actor's Life, a survival guide where she guides aspiring starlets on their own journey while recalling some of her own struggle, frustration, rejection, and doubt. Please welcome to Lady Gang. So excited she's here, Jenna Fisher. I can't
Ooh,
believe
yeah.
you're here.
Thank you. That was an amazing introduction.
she's good at them.
Very good.
Listen, you are very... fabulous. The book, so this was kind of last minute. You're in town and then you're traveling. You're going to be filming or on the book tour or something,
I'm
right?
I'm filming. I'm doing a new movie that Clint Eastwood is directing and
oh,
I get to go to
yeah.
Paris. Right?
That's the dream.
I've never traveled internationally for... No, that's not true. I totally take that back. I have. But,
She's like, I'm just a regular girl.
I was like, no, I did actually. I did a television show in London, so I moved there to do that. That was after The Office. But I'm going to Paris.
That's
to
amazing.
Film with Clint Eastwood.
How long are you there for?
I'm only there for 5 days because I only film one day.
Wow.
And I have one line. They have to bring me all the way to Paris to say one line. I have a
amazing,
larger
though.
Role in the movie, which I already shot in Atlanta.
Oh.
Far less glamorous, but still a
yes.
great city. And
I just can't believe Clint Eastwood is still alive.
Yeah,
guys,
wait,
I just saw him at the Soho House. He looks great.
It's
yeah.
crazy.
Let me tell you something about Clint Eastwood.
He's still all there.
He's amazing. He's very charming. He's yep. very
oh,
handsome.
Yeah.
He's very funny. Like, legit funny guy.
I
and,
love that.
Yeah. We're having a lot of fun on that movie. So I'm sure that man is still getting handed phone numbers.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, hey,
right
Clint.
And left. Oh, yeah. Right and left.
Hello.
I like older men.
So, but we're having you on because of this book. So I got to skim through and read most of the book sort of yesterday. And it's basically like this how-to Hollywood. It's your story of moving here from your small town and having a crappy apartment and like busting your ass to get your big break, which happened all of these years later. So how many years did it take you of like the horribleness before... Stardom.
Well, there's different phases to an acting career. So like the success of it took me 5 years to get my first speaking role on a television show. It was three lines and I played a waitress. No one noticed. It was, oh my gosh. It was Charlie Sheen did the show after Michael J. Fox. Why can't I think of the name of it?
Oh, Don't
just,
Shoot Me?
Just
no.
Shoot Me?
No. It's the one.
It's fine. We loved it so much. Such a big hit.
You guys, it's because I'm a mom and I didn't sleep good last
night. I have no excuse.
We have no excuse.
It's in my book. Everyone, you can read
there
it.
There you go. Okay.
So that was 5 years.
But you were so stoked. You're like, Mom, I'm going to be on TV tonight.
This was before like email blasts. So I actually printed a flyer and snail mailed it to every member of my family telling them to tune in.
That's the cutest thing I've ever heard in my
with like a cartoon drawing of myself on it that I made.
They're like, I made it. Okay.
I did. So that took 5 years to get my first speaking role on a television show, three lines. And then it was about very quickly from there, things started to snowball. And by like year 6 and 7, I was making my living just from acting and I was able to quit my day job. But it took 6 or 7 years before I could quit my day job. But the problem with that was that like I'd earn a big chunk of money. Like I'd do a pilot and you could get paid like $20,000 to do a pilot and then make no money for 8 months.
Right.
And then get paid $6,000 to do a guest spot on a show. So it was like it was very hard to manage your money, but I was doing it and I didn't have to have another job. And then it was 8 years in when I finally landed the role in The Office. So those are kind of the milestones. So it was 5 years of just absolute sadness and grief and struggle. Like, and an additional 3 years of like,
I got three lines
major frustration and like, yeah, until I did a show that got picked up.
Wow. But then I think, and Becca and I, and we've all talked about this before, Becca was on Glee, and there's like this after the big show thing that happens too. Like you're on the biggest show in the world, and then no one wants you because you're Pam and you're Kitty, and then there's that whole thing, right? Afterwards.
Well, yeah, I mean, the struggle never ends. In fact, I considered naming the book The Actor's Life, Struggle, Work, Repeat.
Oh, shit.
But I think it should be called, like, oh Struggle, God. Work, Cry, 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 Think You Should Give Up, Repeat.
Yes. Think You Should Give Up should be in there.
Yeah. Work and then repeat. Then you get a job and you're like, no, I mean, I love it.
Yeah. This is why
and
I
then
do it.
It starts all over again.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So all of those stories.
This stresses me out.
Are kind
it's
of
so
in there. I know, right?
It's so sad.
It's so hard. Sad. But also, The Office was very slow growing. So they ordered. Our first season was 6 episodes long.
Wow. Oh, wow.
So, and then our second season was a 12-episode order. And then they only ordered, like, 4 more. And then 4 more. And it wasn't until season 3, right, where we finally got like, our full
order. We knew you could buy a house.
Exactly.
Like, save every penny. You're like, I'm at the SAG Awards, and I'm wearing from TJ Maxx, because I'm not sure if we're going to have more episodes.
Well, that's a real thing. Because
it's a real thing.
Also because when the show becomes a hit, it's before your salary reflects it. So your salary is still that of
Starbucks.
A very unknown actress. There's a great story that I couldn't fit in my book, but that's amazing, that Renee Zellweger, when she was shooting Jerry Maguire, she like had nothing. And Tom Cruise gave her like this state-of-the-art sound system stereo for her apartment. And she was like, it was like literally the most expensive thing I owned.
Oh my God.
She was so poor. Poor, but she was starring in a movie with Tom Cruise, but it hadn't come out yet.
Yeah. Nobody knew.
So it's like you're poor, but you're getting there.
Yeah.
So it's like she wasn't really making the bank until like 2 years after the movie.
Yes.
Jerry Maguire.
Right.
Because that's when she started like
that's
getting
crazy.
The money.
That's
from
why
that
when
job.
Everyone talks about would you rather be poor and famous or rich and anonymous? Like rich and anonymous is like
there's nothing better than rich
down.
And anonymous.
But some people would take the fame. Like
what?
there are people who would
Kelty?
Take the fame.
I'd probably take the fame.
So
I love attention. One of the things that really stuck out to me in the book was you talked about how important it is to create your own work. And so the story behind Lady Gang is that we were all sort of like, Hollywood, let's create something that's for us that we can never get fired from, that no one's going to tell us what to do or how to wear our eyebrows or hair or whatever. And so we created this. And I think that what you talked about is that you had created a digital series so that you could get SAG cards and all these different things. So tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think here's the thing. people think that all you have to do is come to Hollywood and get an agent and then these jobs are a coming. It does not work like that. Even after you get an agent, you still have to hustle for your own work constantly. I can't tell you the number of times like I write a personal email to a director after I've read a script and then that's the thing that gets the attention, or the hustle never ends. And but then likewise, the people who I know who are the most successful are the ones who are generating their own things. You know, look at Amy Poehler. She created an entire improv community, you know, with Upright Citizens Brigade, and she still does it. She still goes and does improv on stage. And that's the other part of this whole thing, is that you're doing it because you love it. And if you love it, then you're compelled to make it no matter what. Mm-hmm. And most of my biggest successes came out of that formula. So, for example, I did a crazy experimental theater production in downtown Los Angeles in a very scary part of town. Very scary. Like, for sure, I can't believe I'm alive today.
Just on Skid Row doing it.
Just we driving through Skid Row to get there.
Skid Row Playhouse.
Basically. And it was like we wore kabuki makeup. We did Commedia dell'arte. We were doing a musical version of the film Nosferatu. Could Ooh, this sound any film. More
this
like...
sounds like I wouldn't see my husband in it.
Correct. Right? But I did it because I loved the group of people and I was willing to do literally anything. Yeah. And I wasn't doing it because I thought anyone would notice, but just because I needed to be working all the time. And also, by the way, everybody got paid $5 to do it, and we would just put the money in a basket and buy beer for the end of the night. Like, it was just like a beer fund.
Because
like there was some rule, like some stage where you had to get money.
Yeah.
So we would just donate it back and then get beer. But so then lo and behold, one night as I'm leaving, the box office manager, I mean, that sounds fancy. It was like, who knows who that was.
It was Hank from around the corner.
Yeah. Some guy.
He was also making $5.
said that an agent left a card at the box office. And of course, what agent comes to Skid Row to see a play? So I'm not having high hopes, right? Turns out it was this really kind of big deal agent at a medium-sized SAG-accredited agency who saw me in this crazy kabuki makeup singing poorly and just, I don't know, he just liked it. He said he had been brought there on some crazy blind date and he was having a horrible time or something, or brought there on a date, forced to go there. And he was so pleased to have met me. And so I went in and I met with everyone at his agency and vetted it. And he became my first really great agent.
Wow.
And he was
so
like
amazing.
Instrumental in building my career. But, you know,
damn,
that's how it works, right? Like, you don't get your first great agent because you went to the right party and you schmoozed the right person. And it doesn't work like that. And that's part of what I try to explain in the book, is the difference between what you hear it's like and what it's really like.
Yeah.
I want to get to a couple stories from the book, but first we need to talk about Steve Carell's glow up this year. He got so hot. What happened?
We always knew he was that
you
hot.
You did?
Of course.
I did not.
He's a hot guy.
Did you think he's hot now? He's hot.
He's hot now.
Yeah.
But he has like the facial hair and stuff now, doesn't he?
Yeah, but he's like got the round glasses and he's got like kind of like cute. He must have gotten a stylist. I don't know. Do you think he's hot?
I always thought he was hot.
Yeah.
It was
always?
It was like a talent crush. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like someone's way.
But now he's like so physically funny. Attractive.
Yeah.
Silver fox hot.
Yeah.
He's always had like a very good physique.
Oh.
You're like, we all knew.
Oh, like, you hot.
He's always been in really good shape.
Really?
Yeah. Well, when he started The Office, he was like a little pudgy. And then when he got 40-year-old virgin, he thought for the character it would be like really, really funny since the guy's a virgin, like, and he doesn't have any like thing to do in his life except kind of like work out obsessively. That it was like a character thing. And then he got in really great shape, and then he stayed in really great shape, because who gets in really great shape and is like, you know what, I'm gonna go back to the way it was.
This sucks.
So I think he kind of did it for the movie, and then he loved it and he looked great.
He looks great,
but we dressed him horribly on that show.
Right, that's the thing.
So you didn't see him in like a nicely tailored suit.
I mean, everyone was dressed
Your clothes were also horrible.
Yeah, they're pretty bad.
Did you always wear the same outfits over and over again? Like, she only had certain clothes?
I had cardigans. I had a closet, and the closet was size for me, and there was like a row of, you know, that sort of palette of colors, the sort of like minty greens and peaches and pinks colors for Pam, and skirts. And, of course, pantyhose. I wore pantyhose for 9 years.
Oh, my God.
I just want to say.
That's impressive. 9 years.
Oh, my God.
It's just hell. And then you're like, when you go to the bathroom, you have to get fully naked so you can pee.
Like when you're bloated. And
God. No.
And back 9 years ago, they also didn't have the like crotchless one. So you had the full seam up the front when you're bloated, right?
Yes, that's true.
It's horrible. Because now they do like the ones that are like made on some like 3D printer that don't have any seams.
Wow. Fancy.
Anyway, I'm just saying. I've not worn them.
No, it was crazy.
Pantyhose had a glow up too, guys.
But I didn't.
Glow up episode.
I didn't wear them all the time. Like if I was seated at the desk and I didn't have to stand up, I would wear sweatpants. I was just dressed from the top up.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
That was like the most popular question after rehearsal. I would say, are you going to see the bottom of me? And then, like, they would joke about it.
So, okay.
Yeah.
These girls here are in a constant fight to be the love interest of
Larry Taven.
Yes.
Oh.
They love him.
Except for one of us is married and one of us is single.
Is available. It's Jack.
I don't know if I really want to be in a romantic
relationship.
I'd be in a romantic relationship with him, but I don't know about the sexual.
How are you making this difference? Like, tell me what's happening in your romantic. Are you just like cuddling
I think I would
a lot?
Just yeah. be scared to have sex with
would
him.
Would you spoon?
I guess. Yeah.
Make out.
Yeah.
Blowjob.
Okay, that's where it stops.
So you're cuddling, making out, and he's like making you laugh, and you guys are just making each other feel loved?
Yeah.
Holding hands at the mall?
I'd have to see what you're working with.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I could be sweet either way.
Also, does he have old man smell yet? That's a thing.
See, that's what
they have old man smell.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, like they start, as you get older, you start like dying on the inside first.
I know exactly what the smell is, though.
Yes,
I
you
can
do.
Smell it now.
Yeah, I know.
And I'm scared I'm going to smell it on Larry.
It's like they could have freshly brushed teeth, but there's something.
It's
old.
Musky. It's old skin just decaying.
Is it old fillings? I don't know.
Do women get that?
I hope not.
Yes, but I think it happens to men.
Earlier. Okay, all right.
I feel like women can cover it up, too.
Yeah,
nice so many.
Nice.
Okay, anyways. There was a purpose to this.
Yes.
Welcome, Jenna. You have a great Larry David story.
Yes, I do. In my chapter about auditioning, I just want people to know that I've had some really tragic auditions. And one of my most tragic was when I auditioned for Larry David personally for Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Tell me everything.
So,
there's so many good stories in the book, so I'm only having you share two.
Okay.
Because I don't want to give away everything. Also, you guys have to read the book.
Larry David's like an ongoing joke. So
This is important to us.
Very important for us.
So here was the audition. So something that people may or may not know is that Curb Your Enthusiasm is mostly improvised. Mm-hmm. So you get like an outline that you have to follow so that everyone stays on story point. And the auditions are the same way. So they give you just a general outline of what your little scene is, and then you have to improvise it. So I went in for a pre-read with the casting director, and they liked me, so they brought me in for a callback, which is the next step of auditioning. But at this callback, at callbacks in general, you usually audition for maybe the director or producer, like someone a little bit higher up the food chain. Mm-hmm. And in this case, I would be auditioning for Larry David because he was the producer of the show, but also with Larry David because the scene was with him in the show.
Shit.
Was this for like a big character on the show or
no.
is it for like a
for like a
guest
one
spot?
Just a guest spot. Yeah, okay. Exactly. Not a regular role.
And this was after The Office?
I believe that I can't exactly remember the timeline. I feel like it was that maybe I had been on The Office like a year, but maybe The Office hadn't even come out yet or something, right?
That's
so,
better.
Because Allison Jones, the casting director, cast The Office, and she also cast Curb Your Enthusiasm. Okay. And so I think she was like, this girl, she's, you know, it's going to come out. And then, you know.
Yeah.
So I went in and I auditioned with him and they told me, all right, you're in like a store, whatever store you want, maybe a pet store, and you run into Larry and he hasn't RSVP'd to your son's birthday and you're going to give him shit about it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, go. And I'm like, got it. You know, I'm on it. So there's Larry David. And by the way, there's Jeff Garland is in the room as well.
Who's that?
He's like, he plays his agent.
Okay.
His agent.
It's his manager.
His manager, yeah. Okay, his
the Wikipedia of Larry David here is like, well, actually.
I just saw Jeff Garland and Larry David do like a stand-up thing together, and it was like the funniest thing I've ever seen.
They're amazing, right? Okay. So I'm in the room with them, and they're like, okay, go. Well, I just freeze. All I is do exactly what they told me, which is be like, Larry, you didn't RSVP to my son's birthday. And I just kept repeating that over and over like a broken record. But Larry, I didn't get your RSVP. I mean, I didn't get it. I didn't get your RSVP. And it was awful. It was just like a very obvious just.
What was he responding back? Was he saying anything?
He was saying things, but I wasn't going anywhere with it. I was just, I mean, all that was going through my brain was, I'm standing in front of Larry David and I'm not thinking of anything interesting. I'm standing in front of Larry David and nothing interesting is coming out of my mouth. So I was just like in a tailspin.
Yeah. And
it was very sad. But it gets better or worse, however you want to look at it. Worse at the time, better for the purposes of the story. As I'm getting ready to leave, and they're like, thank you very much for coming in. I misinterpreted a gesture from Larry, which I took to mean he wanted to hug me goodbye. Which I thought was odd, but also people hug a lot in Hollywood. But I'm like, for him in particular, he doesn't seem like a hugger, but he's clearly opened his arms. So I start to walk toward him. And as soon as I realize that he doesn't want to hug me, that he was just gesturing toward the door, it's too late and I'm hugging Larry David.
Did he hug you back?
Not really. I'm sure he was like, what's up with crazy town actress who bombed this audition and is now hugging me goodbye?
This is the best story.
It was awful. And I went home and cried.
And then the same thing happened with Jerry Seinfeld and Kesha like 10 years later.
Oh my gosh, no kidding, right?
You and Kesha.
I was.
You and Kesha.
I was.
You should I'm Larry David's group. Kesha.
I can't. It's amazing. It's just amazing.
I just want, does he know the story yet? Like, now that your book's on?
I ran into Jeff Garland and years later, and I was Jeff, hi. I'm sure you remember me. I'm the crazy girl who hugged Larry David. And he was like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Right.
And I was like, okay, so it didn't register on anyone's like master list of crazy things that have happened to them. Good.
Okay, this is what I'm saying.
The reason I asked, though, if this was pre or post office is because those bad things can happen before you get on like a hit show and people know who you are. Because it's like in a sea of actresses, you can do like, you can run the gamut for crazy. And as long as you're not like someone that they really know, it does sort of leave their brain. Like they can't place it as like the girl from The Office.
Who hugged me at an audition.
So it's like those embarrassing things are so much better before you get any fame, because then after that, it's like that story would be all over town.
Now it's going to be.
True.
Glad you wrote the book.
Now it will be.
I can't wait.
But she's recovered.
No, totally. It's fine. Clint Eastwood, you're doing fine. You'd be like, Larry, I moved up. I glowed up. Okay. The last story I want to talk to you about before we get to our game is how Molly Shannon changed your life.
Molly Shannon.
This is the craziest story.
I have goosebumps and I haven't even started speaking
yet. Oh my God.
Get ready. Get glowed in, girls.
Okay, so it's year one. I've been out here. I have a horrible job as a transcriber for the TCA, Television Critics Association event. And if you don't know what that is, every fall...
It's hell in a
hotel. I was literally there today.
And you were.
I took Jordan, and we can attest, it is hell in a hotel.
It is. So, yes, they take this gorgeous hotel in Pasadena, and they rent it out for 3 or 4 days, and the stars and, like, creators of every television show come and give press conferences to the press. And it was my job to sit in on the press conferences, create shorthand notes, and then along with a taped audio recording of it, go transcribe these events. And then you hand it off to the journalists. And then, so that happens all day. And then all night, there are parties, in quotes, where all of the stars and the creators and the journalists mingle. And there's like appetizers and drinks. And it looks like a party, but it's not really a party because the journalists are trying to get the actors or the creators to give them some special scoop that's better than what they heard at the standard press conference that I transcribed for you earlier.
Have you hugged Larry David lately?
Exactly. Any cool story. So I was working this event as a transcriber, and if we got done early or on time, we could go to the parties at night for free, which was awesome, mostly because I was poor and I wanted free food and free alcohol, but also because you could just see all the celebrities and just be in the room with them and just feel like maybe I'm kind of close to it, you know, like it might happen. And there was this one party that I really, really wanted to go to, and it was the Saturday Night Live party. And it was just because comedy was my thing, and I just wanted to be around all these greats, but I didn't really know, like, what to expect. So in order to go, and to keep the story a little short, and also to make you buy the book, I'm not going to tell you the part about how I lied to get out of work in order to go, but it's quite wonderful. it's actually really great. So I told this elaborate lie so that I could get out of work to go to the Saturday Night Live party, hoping to just meet anyone. And while I was there, I saw Molly Shannon. And she was talking to a group of reporters who all had little tape recorders in her face. And I kind of like sashayed up and inserted myself into her conversation. And to get noticed, I started making like these awful jokes, and people were giving me the evil eye, and it was really awkward, and I wasn't really supposed to be there. And I was like, I might get kicked out. And when this sort of thing happened, anyway, so I'm doing that. And then the reporters kind of move away, and Molly Shannon is there, and I seize the moment, and I just say, Molly, I'm sorry, I'm not really supposed to be here, but I'm an aspiring actress, and if there's just like, I don't know, do you have any advice or anything, because I admire you so much. Now, most people should say, you're a Looney Tune who has broken into this party, you know, good luck, or what, like, just giving me, like, whatever. But she didn't brush me off. Instead, she went one step further and was incredibly generous. And I'm going to cry thinking about it because it was still so pivotal and meaning to me. She just grabbed me by the shoulders and she looked me in the eye and she said, sweetheart, my advice is don't give up. Just never give up. You can do it. It took me 10 years of no one knowing who I was before I got on SNL. And after I got on SNL, everything changed. So you just keep at it, okay? Just don't give up. And then she, like, walked away. Molly. And I was...
Isn't that crazy?
Changed my life. And I went home and I called my mom and I was like, Molly Shannon said, do not give up. She said it took her 10 years because I'd been out here 1 year and I had no agent and I wasn't in the union and none of it was happening the way it was supposed to or the way I thought it would. I thought I must have been doing it all wrong. How was I failing? But then here was this legend who told me it took her 10 years. She's such a talent, right? To get noticed. Mm-hmm. And so it just stayed in my head. I was just like, 10 years, 10 years. Molly Shannon said 10 years. And every time I would have a bad moment, I would say, Molly Shannon told me 10 years. So 10 years later, I'm at the premiere of Walk Hard, my first leading role in a major studio film. And who do I see at the party is Molly Shannon, who has come out to
my
help support.
Like...
I know. Who came out to support like some SNL cast members who had been in the movie. And I walked up to her and I was like, Molly Shannon, I have to tell you a story.
Oh my God, I love it.
10 years ago, you said these words to me and here we are now. And then she was like, oh, honey, I told you. She's the sweetest person in the whole world. And then we grabbed a photographer and he took a picture.
Oh my God, I love it.
Amazing, right?
That's
amazing.
That's the best full circle
craziest,
story I've ever heard.
Right? I
most
know.
Amazing story.
Just incredible synchronicity. But also, like, I have to say, part of this book is born from that generosity of that moment with Molly Shannon, because I saw how few cheerleaders aspiring actors have. Mm-hmm. And just how most people just roll their eyes and they're like, you know, thanks for contributing to the traffic problems. When are you going to go home? And so... But she took that moment to encourage another artist. And I thought, I want to be that. I want to be that to other artists. And wow. And if I ever get the chance, then I'm going to do it. And so that is was part of the inspiration behind the book, was to Molly Shannon it forward.
Damn.
I love it.
It's amazing. And so if you're interested in like moving to New York, moving to Hollywood and being an actor, actress, musician, someone in the business, this book is amazing. If you just love like a personal memoir of like a How I Made It story, inspiration, and you are literally like a school teacher in Idaho and never want to come to Hollywood, it is still a great read because well, there's like incredible stories
Larry
like that.
David story. I might impede myself.
Okay. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we are going to play the last worst job game.
Now back to the lady gang.
We're back.
I don't even want to know.
We're sliding close together because we already know the answers because the answers are from her book.
Oh, okay. Oh. Got it.
Okay. So we're going to have you guys guess. Just a couple. Not all. Can I borrow your pen? Stop stealing my pen.
Thank you.
Can I borrow my pen back? Okay. So first of all, I want to know your last worst job. I think I know yours. Before you had your company. Have you ever had a job other than your own company?
I worked at Old Navy for 3 weeks.
Thank you. And then you didn't show up, right?
And then I got fired because I went on spring break.
Was it a good trip?
It was. I went to Denver.
Did you wear Old Navy?
Some culottes?
God, I hated that 3 week job.
I still love Old Navy.
Me too. Okay. My last
worst job.
I mean, I have so many, but I'll say the Mystic spray tanning that I did, Gotham Tan in New York City, was pretty much up there.
I want you to go back into spray tanning.
Yeah, that would be so good.
It's a really good one because mine never.
Listen, I was not good. I was not passionate.
Jenna, what was your last worst job?
Oh, well, my worst job was when I worked as a telephone psychic. Oh.
You're telling me those are bullshit?
It's true. When I was an aspiring actor, I signed up to be a telephone psychic.
How do they train you for that?
They don't want me to give you the training?
Yeah.
Hi, do you feel naturally intuitive?
Oh, for sure.
Do you read tarot cards or know anything about astrology?
Kind of.
Great. So we're going to route the calls to your house. You can sign in anytime and keep the people on the phone for longer than 5 minutes because you only get paid after the first 5 minutes. Congratulations.
Well?
You're a telephone psychic.
Can we do that now?
I know. That's amazing.
Probably.
We should start.
No, I never accepted my paycheck because it was super depressing. That was what was wrong about being a telephone psychic. Is that like,
I'd rather have nothing than
50
bucks. There's
a lot of super sad people who call you, yeah, and I felt really bad.
Just wanted to talk.
Yeah, who just need company. Or it's like kids who you know are going to get in trouble when their parents get the phone bill,
and then
I just felt bad for them too.
Yeah.
My intuition is telling me you're like,
I'm an asshole. We need to have 5 minutes of silence to call in the spirits, and then I can start. That's what I would do.
Yeah, exactly. So just light a candle and wait with me.
Sit on the phone for about 2 hours.
Now, I'm going to give you each one guess on these.
Okay.
If you can get any of them correct,
yes,
you will get a hall pass in the Kelty Knight anal retentive I need everything nows of the lady gang.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
That's
okay.
A lie.
Okay. I'll give you a hall pass where you can be like, I'm putting in my get out of this Kelty hell free card.
I feel like I'm going to take it back, but
yeah.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to say the star, and then you're going to say a clue, maybe.
Of what their last
worst job before they became a star.
Okay.
George Clooney.
It has to do with your feet.
Shoe model.
Close.
Incorrect.
Shoe salesman.
Correct. Ah, damn.
I'm sorry.
Okay, that one was easy.
Fight.
That was a warm up.
I gave a pretty easy clue.
Becca,
I was a
gets
shoe
a
model.
1 point.
That was my other bad job. I was a shoe model.
I was a shoe model too. Oh. Now my feet got bigger.
Me too.
I was a perfect six. Now I'm
Me
seven.
Too.
What
Me
the
too.
Hell
I have to be a six for a shoe.
Yeah. To be a six. Yeah,
really?
That's very annoying.
I would have never.
Okay,
been.
Which one should we do next? You pick.
Jim Carrey.
Okay,
love
Jim Carrey. Improv with Larry David. Here we go.
Exactly. Jim Carrey. This person might have creeped you out in grade school.
Janitor?
Oh my God!
Yes!
Jim Carrey was my first crush.
Okay. Becca, 1 point. Jack, 1 point.
And Let's I also do... didn't get it wrong the first choice. So.
Well, you should have
you should have been
up.
Faster. Ding, ding. Where's the bell?
Gotta go after what you want, girl.
I like this one.
Yeah. Tom Cruise. Do you want to give the clue?
Sure. He had a great costume.
Clown.
Incorrect.
costume?
Like his uniform at work was great.
Cop. That's what I was going to say. Fireman?
Firefighter.
You're all wrong. Bellhop.
Ooh. That's cute.
Kind of sexy, though.
Yeah.
Okay, one more. This is the tiebreaker. Are you guys ready?
Yeah.
We definitely have to do this one.
Yeah.
Okay, you give the clue. Brad Pitt.
Brad Pitt had this job. I don't know how to give a clue about this, but in, it involves food and a costume.
And a costume? Was he like a server?
Did he work at a ballpark with like popcorn or hot dogs?
Catering company?
A costume?
A costume.
I'm going to give you one more. It's a chain restaurant.
Oh, TJ Fridays.
No.
Damn it. That's a good costume.
They wear a costume. They just wear flair.
Chuck E. Cheese?
No, you're incorrect.
A costume.
A costume at a restaurant? McDonald's? What's he wrong?
Is it a fast food restaurant?
You're getting closer.
You really? Are getting close.
Yeah, you're Burger on the right King? Track now.
It's an American
brand.
Oh,
they skate around?
In the ones?
No. The fast food.
Oh, are you talking about
Ed DeBevics? Those...
Wait, what?
Ed DeBevics?
What's... I don't even know what that means.
Oh, Ed DeBevics is like a famous restaurant. I think it's in Chicago and other places where the waiters roller skate around and they're really mean to you on purpose.
Oh, I've heard of that.
Okay.
I want to go there. It's not Shakey's?
No. Should we give them the restaurant?
Yeah.
Okay. Brad Pitt danced outside a restaurant, El Pollo Loco, in this costume.
Chicken?
Yes.
Ty.
He did.
That's amazing.
So the next time you see one of those chickens, there might be
Could be Brad Pitt. Could be the next Brad Pitt.
Inside.
Swoop him up.
Dang.
So you should make out with him.
Jack.
And just don't take off the chicken suit.
I'm just going to pretend
it is Brad Pitt.
I'm into it. Hot.
Jack loves a costume character on Hollywood Boulevard. Her boyfriend used to be one.
That was not my boyfriend.
A slight date. Okay. Well, so I think he thought you was your boyfriend.
Maybe.
Okay.
Okay. We're done.
Anyway, when we come back, Jenna's going to help you lady gang her life because she has climbed the mountain of Larry David and...
Live to tell.
Hey, ladies! Funky.
Ask the lady gang.
And we're back.
We're back. Before we start, ask the lady gang, if you guys want 30% off of jackvanek.com, use my code LADIESFIRST. I think that's right. If it's not, let me know. Okay, so for this part of our podcast, we have girls write in their questions about life and love and whatever, and we give them questionable advice. Mm-hmm. So, you ready?
Ready.
I was a psychic, so.
So do you want to tell me what the first question is then, since you know?
Does it have to do with love?
No.
Oh.
But kind... No. Which is kind of... This question's weird.
It could.
I'm getting a feeling it's about things.
It's about things. Okay.
Passion.
It comes from Emma. And Emma says, I moved to New York at the end of the summer to start my master's, and I'm loving it so far. I'm still working to build my network of dude friends, but I find it so hard to meet adult men looking for girls to just be their friends. I don't know why you cannot find girlfriends, but okay. She says, I've been on a few dates with this one guy and we get along very well. The conversation flows and he seems like somebody I could really be friends with. The problem is I know he's into me romantically and I'm totally not. We kissed a few times and I just go along with it to see if it can get me anywhere. But I'm just so not excited about it. My friends tell me to just ghost or stop talking to him. But the problem is I actually think he's a really nice guy and I don't want it to end like that. Please help. I don't really understand the question.
I get it. Okay, so here's the thing. You know, like when you're in high school and you think everything's like a super big deal and it's going to stay with you forever, and then you like remember it forever. It feels really big, and mm-hmm. then you get older and you get sort of an adult life, and then you realize like those were just like anxieties of a big feeling teenager. Not at all like to say that they're not important, because they are and they're real and they're your problems. But this is sort of like a perspective thing, which is like the thing that like I would say is to like you just have to cut the guy loose. You just have to tell him the truth. You just have to say, listen, I want to be your friend, but if that's not realistic, I totally get it. But that's an easy thing to say because like you don't want to hurt someone's feelings, mm-hmm. right? But then you also don't think about yourself. Would you want someone to drag you along? No. And be wishy-washy? No. And someone said to me once when I was dating, they were like, you know what? We're all adults. We get our hearts broken and we break hearts and then we find the right person and then we don't have to do it anymore.
Right.
And so I think she just has to be honest.
You got
to
stop kissing him though.
Yeah, no, it's
mixed messages, girl.
Leading him on.
You're leading him on. Yeah, you don't have to ghost him.
Well, no, but that's what I mean. Like, you just have to say, like, be honest. Just like say, I don't want to do it like this anymore.
My vagina's dry.
I'm just like confused because it's like, okay, you either met him off of a dating app, which is for dating, or you met him and he asked you on a date. So he's like obviously romantically interested in you. So the continue to go on dates and make out thing
it's a problem.
Is odd.
Becca does not think guys and girls can be friends, though.
I don't.
I don't either.
I agree.
Yeah. Especially not after you've gone on a bunch of dates.
Well, not now.
Especially not after you've kissed them.
Yeah. No.
No.
So you'll never be friends with them? Is that the answer to our question?
Yeah.
Cool. Next question. Next question comes from Isabel. Isabel says, hey, ladies, I'm 16 years old and buckling down on picking a college and deciding where I really want to go with all the opportunities out there that I have. My dream is New York, but I'm open to other cities. Is there any advice you can give on choosing a college, city living, and how to manage city dreams on a budget?
Oh, my advice about college is don't go into too much debt because it'll just weigh you down for the rest of your life. So I think you have to like be a little pragmatic. That would be my advice. But I also think that, you know, you can pick a school in New York and go to New York and not end up in massive debt as well. But I would just say when you pick a college, manage your long-term debt from the beginning if you can.
I would agree. Yeah. I went to college in New York. But the other thing is if your dream is New York to eventually live there, I do have to say that going to college there really gave me a leg up on like becoming an adult in the city, because I was kind of like the kid in the city that was still had my schedule of classes and my dorm room, and so it was kind of like this like preschool for New York City, where I have other friends who planned on going to New York but didn't go to school in New York, who planned on ending up in New York, who didn't go to college in New York, who by the time they graduated college it was already too scary, like the thought of getting out there. So I don't think I would have ended up there had I not gone to school there. I don't know.
I think that's really smart advice, actually.
It felt like a nice transition.
Yeah. It's a safe way to get accustomed to the city.
Yeah. Because it's scary.
I do have to say, though, well, obviously New York is like the most expensive place to live. So if you are like super concerned about being on a budget, I would apply everywhere and apply for scholarships, because you never know what you could find somewhere else that could end up being free.
Also, get used to having horrible jobs if you want to live to a city. Like when I first lived in New York and I was broke, I used to spray people with Calvin Klein Eternity perfume in Penn Station. And like one time, what was the CK1 and then CKB? Yeah. Remember the black bottle? And I had to stand outside the Prince Street subway station in the middle of winter. It was horrible. And spray people and be like, have you tried? And then like on my resume, I put Calvin Klein model. Amazing. I was like literally in a puffy jacket that said Calvin Klein on it. Anyway, okay. Get used to being poor. Fun.
Okay, our last question comes from Dina. Dina says, I'm 36 and I've been married to my husband, who is 41, since I was 18. We had our first child when I was 15. We have four children, and having children so early, we both decided on our careers very early on, placing income and stability over any dreams. I thought we were on the same page, but my husband wants to quit his job and pursue his dream as a photographer. He spends thousands of dollars on cameras and equipment and spends lots of time away from home to take photos. And when he is home, he's editing. When we fight, he whines that it's his dream and that I'm not supportive. For me, this is not what I signed up for, and this would completely change my life plan. What do you guys think?
Wow. I have so much compassion for everyone in this situation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. What do you guys think?
Well, what's he photographing?
Is he getting paid?
Like, is he going on Model Mayhem and like doing bikini shots? Or like, is he a wildlife photographer? Is he a commercial photographer? Photography is a fantastic hobby. It's not a great career. It's even like, my neighbor used to be one of like the top photographers and did the Kardashians and stuff. And like, even he was like, when's
my
next job?
Like, so unstable.
I have a plan. Dina, I have a plan. I was recently in a similar-ish situation. And we decided that we would both equally take care of our roles pre-job change. Like, he would still continue to contribute the exact same amount of money, whether that means he saves up a bunch and then decides to go into his passion job and quit the other one, mm-hmm. or he takes on, like, a side job, like bartending or waiting tables or whatever it is, so that you don't feel the effects of the job change.
Right.
And as far as, like, the amount of time he's spending, if he's passionate about it and if he's, like, happier,
then doesn't that make you kind of happy that like your husband's doing something he's enjoying? And as long as you don't feel like he's totally neglecting the family, like I think sometimes you have to suck it up and like be happy that your partner's happy.
I think it's nice that he's like modeling the idea of going after your passion in life. We don't really know the circumstances if how exactly this is contributing to like the family's stability,
right.
How the children feel about it. But it is a nice lesson for your kids to be like, listen, it's never too late.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Don't let life go by without really trying the thing you want to do. That's the thing we tell all our kids, right? You can go after whatever you want, even when you're in your 40s.
Yeah.
And so that is a nice thing for the kids to be seeing. And then I think you also want to model supporting that mm-hmm. as much as you can. But I can see it does sound like, well, this is a big change. It's not what they kind of agreed on. It does sound like a shift in values here.
Yeah. And I totally feel her pain where it's like, well, then because you're doing that, can I do that too? And then if there's double instability. Yeah.
Synchronized swimming.
He's 41. It's a midlife crisis.
Yeah.
Listen, would you rather him have photography or hookers?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying,
just
girl?
Just tell him to get like a dragon tattoo on his arm.
Right. Or why doesn't he set up a weekend photography place and he could do family photos or something on the Saturdays?
I think it's just like, there needs to be some kind of balance of what's happening.
Anyway, don't take our advice. It's horrible. Jenna's usually was okay.
I don't know. It's overly serious and like, it sounds like it's your own mother telling you how to run your life, but I can't help it because now I'm a mom and I can't get out of it.
So now you can do that.
She's stuck. You guys, you can check out Jenna, Ms. Jenna Fisher on Instagram. You have a great Instagram, by the way.
I know.
It's really cute. It's like right behind the scenes.
I'm glad you like it.
And please go on over to your bookstore or pre-order, or this is actually airing. The book's out today.
Oh.
So congratulations.
Yay.
You launched the baby.
Congrats.
So head over to Amazon or wherever your books are sold. Get The Actor's Life, A Survival Guide. It is such a good read, whether you are in the Hollywood world or you just love, you know, the behind the scenes of Hollywood life. It's fantastically written. There's even a couple really embarrassing pictures of you like in Fiddler on the Roof, which is awesome.
I included every awful photo of me that I could find.
There's one section, I'm not going to give it away, but she goes through like her 10 years of headshots and walks them through. And there's a story there that is just so awesome. You guys have to check it out. So we love the book and we loved having you on. Thank you so much for coming. And you can also check out us on social media at The Lady Gang, at Becca, at Jack Vanek, at Kelty Knight. Make sure you sign up for our newsletter on theladygang.com and check out theladygang.com for all of our other fun stuff. And that's it.
See you next Tuesday.
See you next Tuesday. Yay!
Join the Lady Gang every Tuesday at iTunes and at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com. Thanks for listening.
Happy Earth Month, everybody. Now, I know every year we write down our different goals that we want to accomplish for yourself, people around you, manifest it. And maybe one of our goals for 2024 is to shop sustainably. You value companies that are thoughtful in every aspect of how they run their business. Good news, Macy's makes it easy to do just that. This Earth Month, join Macy's in an effort to shop more sustainably with brands like Carter's, Little Planet, Oak, On 34th, Elemis, and more. You can donate online or in-store and learn more at Macy's.com/purpose. And who doesn't love going to the park, especially in the spring? Fresh air, frisbees, picnics, super cute dogs on leashes. I mean, that's my dream. Soaking up the sun with your friends or your kids or your nieces and nephews. Check this out. Macy's is supporting Trust for Public Lands Community Schoolyards Project. Their goal is to transform vacant schoolyards into green spaces to help create healthy, livable communities for generations to come. I love that a big brand like Macy's is supporting small changes to make a big difference. Again, donate in-store or online and learn more at Macy's.com/purpose.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit Spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.